You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Buck, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call, you can text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. It's Wednesday, February 12th. Today, the average price of a gallon of 2% milk in Wisconsin is $3.18, the same as yesterday. The average price of a dozen large eggs, $5.53, up 12 cents from yesterday. ABC News says this morning, egg prices, a closely watched symbol of rising costs, soared 53% in January compared to a year ago. Beef prices up 5%. Bacon prices jumped 6% in January compared to a year ago. Also, experts say Donald Trump's trade wars, including the recent tariffs put on foreign steel and aluminum, will likely put upward pressure on other consumer goods like cars and beer, just to name a few. I don't think anybody expected the second administration to come in and immediately solve all these problems, but I do find it interesting that since he's been in office, we haven't heard anything about the price of groceries.
Oh no, we heard something about that when he told 60 Minutes he couldn't make the prices of groceries go down, which I don't think any level-headed person expected that. I don't expect a president to be able to do that, but it was all about the eggs, people. It was all about the eggs. So, and when we do our research every day for how much those two foodstuffs cost today, eggs a dozen. A dozen large generic eggs hit $7.
Not across the board, but at some retailers.
At some retailers. And if you haven't seen the news, Trader Joe's is going to be limiting their customers to one dozen per day because of the avian flu and what's doing to the supply demand. So, yeah. Not a lot of talk about the egg prices and the grocery prices coming out of the current White House, I will say.
Well, again, I agree with you, Greg, in that one person in one administration isn't able to come in and just fix the inflationary problems. Unfortunately, that's not what folks were told.
Yeah. No, oh, no. Inflation would have.
I'm going to come in and I'm going to fix it and grocery prices are going to go down the day after I come in. Yeah, that hasn't happened. But anyway, we will be keeping track of the prices. Just little updates as we start the show every day. We have a lot of stuff coming up for you today. Jim Santel, our colleague and friend and host of Amicus, a law review on Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 across the Civic Media Radio Network, is going to be joining us after 10:30 news to talk about some of the moves that the Trump administration is doing, which is essentially defying the courts.
Yeah.
And I didn't think you could do that. Again, we're not lawyers. We're lawyer adjacent. That's why we have smart people come on the program.
Yeah.
To explain these things. So yeah. Jim Santel will be here after the 10:30 news. Dan Schaefer joining us. He normally joins us on Friday at 11:06. He's taking a little break, a little respite. Everyone needs those.
Yes.
Everyone needs to take a breath. So Dan Schaefer going to be joining us today after the 11 o'clock news. We will be talking about the races in Wisconsin. Of course, we're talking about state school superintendent of public schools and also the Supreme Court race. The primary for the superintendent is less than a week away now. It's Tuesday.
Yep. And today, even though it is snowing down here in Radio Park, I'm going to go vote like fast.
Are you?
I'm going to vote early. I want to get that done. And then I'm going to go home, hunker down.
Yeah, it's supposed to. I'm glad you brought that up because we wanted to start that too. We do have a winter storm warning in effect for southeastern Wisconsin. That doesn't kick in until noon today. Although, as you said, Greg, here in Milwaukee too, it started snowing about 8:30 and it is picking up now. Snow totals expected between 5 to 9 inches. A lot of school districts, including MPS, canceled yesterday because the snow is expected to get really heavy around 3 o'clock this afternoon, which is right around the time they'd be getting out of school.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so sometimes it's more about they're worried about getting kids home safely. They can probably get in okay, but it's getting home. Yeah. That's going to be a big issue. And for you too, if you're going to be driving home after work tonight, it could be a mess. So expect lots of delays. Build in some extra time if you can. If your work is amenable, maybe you can get out a little bit early. And otherwise, the thing to check before you hit the roads, 511.wi.gov. We push this all the time, but it's a really, really useful website, and you can download it as an app. 511wi.gov. That will bring up the entire state and every accident all across the state and where the road closures are and all of those things. You can even see some of the DOT cameras so you can get a live view of what's happening on the roadways. So please utilize that just to keep yourself safe and so you know what's going to be out there as you are hitting the roads. Also, always, as we do, we will wrap up the show today with this shouldn't be a thing. Today it's the Walk This Way edition. If you ever have a thing you think should not be, send it in to Greg and me at janesays@civicmedia.us, J-A-N-E-S-A-Y-S, janesays@civicmedia.us. We wanted to start off with this, though, and I would love to hear your opinion about this, especially if you're a parent or if you had maybe you don't have kids in grade schools anymore, but I would love your opinion on this. This is from the Wisconsin Examiner, Baylor Spears with the byline, and it says, Republican lawmakers propose cell phone bans in schools. This bill called AB2 would require school districts to adopt a policy generally prohibiting pupils from using wireless communication devices during instructional time. Can't they just say you can't use your cell phone in class?
They do, honestly. They
can we not talk like real people?
Dear pupils, please put down your telecommunication devices, for I'm trying to instill knowledge within your tiny brain boxes.
Wireless communication devices, if you're not sure, are defined as portable wireless devices capable of providing voice, messaging, or other data communication between two or more parties. This also explicitly includes cell phones, tablets, laptops, and gaming devices. Yeah. So support for this measure is from Representative Joel Kitchen, who is a Republican from Sturgeon Bay, and Senator Rachel Cabral Quivira, a Republican from Appleton. They say the policy will be beneficial to students. And even though many schools already have some restrictions, they say a statewide policy is needed to give more power to the school districts. So should they ban cell phones from schools? I know there are certainly other schools around the country that have already done this. What do you think about this? Is this a good idea? 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. You can call and or text. It's the same number. Let us know what you think about this. I understand for some parents, tragically, in this day and age of school shootings, where they want their kids to have their phones on them in case something like that happens.
Yeah. And I get that. And I understand that. I understand that point of view. I really, really do. And unfortunately, you can't even say something like, well, that doesn't happen all the time. It happens all the time. But there has to be some limitations. There have to be some enforcements. These kids should not be able to just look at their phones while they're in class. I mean, unless they're doing a class where they have a tablet that's given to them, or they're using school given materials on this tablet, it hampers the learning. It hampers the focusing. And it's even said here in the article itself, that's what one of these things the state law is looking to do, is help with the current enforcement, to help with the current policies in place around the state, but also to help learn and focus. Calvin, you are younger than us. You had your cell phone in school before we ever did. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, I think certainly limiting distractions in schools is something that needs to be a priority, and cell phones are precisely that. But I will say kids are all, especially when it comes to technology, kids are always one step ahead and know how to play the system and get around it. My younger brother is a first year fifth grade teacher, And he's having the hardest time right now with his students on their school-issued Chromebooks, laptops, that during time when they need to be working on them, doing things that aren't work on them.
Yeah.
And it's
so they're playing games on them and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's like the IT and the administration can't keep up with all the websites that have games on them. And he, as a teacher, has 20 kids. He can't be looking over all their shoulders at the same time. So it's tough.
I mean, yeah, I get, I'm always looking at it from the phone point of view. It's like, to me, if your kid has a phone, which is fine, kids have phones nowadays. That's a mode of communication between parents and children. But to me, that should be locked up in a locker. Look at it at lunch. Look at it after school. If you have a break, fine. But the cell phone should not be in class, period. And the teacher should have the ability to just take them away and be like, all right. Or say, go directly to your locker and put it in your locker now. As far as the tablets go or the Chromebooks go, yeah, that's a whole other issue. And I mean, I'm really surprised at this point there isn't some sort of software that's available that just automatically says, like, all right, you get these websites. You get exactly what you need for, like, if this is a Chromebook and you go to this website, that's all you get to see, and then limited Google searching. But yeah, I can't imagine what it's like to be a teacher trying to police all that. That's not what you went to, you didn't go to school to do that.
There are so many things we expect our teachers to do that they are not paid nearly enough for and do not have the training for. Maybe they should hire one of Calvin's brother's fifth graders to come up with a way to block all that stuff, because it sounds like we're talking about the future hackers of tomorrow.
Well, I mean, yeah, that it's definitely like, if there's interest in computer, I mean, I don't know. I don't know, Calvin, are they quote-unquote breaking the devices so they can get into them and see websites they aren't allowed to see? Or is it just a matter of they're just going to websites that IT hasn't thought of yet to block?
Yeah, they're definitely not. I mean, they're smart kids, but they're not doing anything that's like extracurricular with the device. It's just stuff that the IT administration hasn't caught up with, and it's a lot of the websites are like coded. They'll be like cool math games.
Yeah.
So, well, it has math in the title, so the IT things don't catch it and stuff like that.
Should they ban cell phones in schools in Wisconsin? 855-752-4842. Would love to hear from you. If you have prior experiences, please let us know. Stay close. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air. We're coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
I've been speaking at you, baby, but you never speak back to me. Pick up on the phone.
Pick up on the phone.
I know you're home.
Pick up
on
the phone.
You're all alone. Pick up on the phone and say something sweet.
Jane, you are muted.
I drove past your house and I saw you.
That's what that thing is. That little X that goes through the microphone. That's,
buttons. That's
all the little button things. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach, resident young person, Calvin on the board, coming to you live from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream, on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Before the break, talking about a new bill up for consideration in Wisconsin, Representative Joel Kitchens, a Republican from Sturgeon Bay, and Senator Rachel Cabral Guevara, a Republican from Appleton, want to ban cell phones in schools. Representative Kitchens says the law won't usurp local control. Every district can determine its own policy. He said an amendment to the bill was drafted to clarify Schools can ban devices throughout the entire day, including lunch. He said the bill is intended to be as open as possible because we hear all about local control and sending it back to local communities and sending it back to local schools. This might be an overreach, maybe in some people's opinion, but we want to know, do you think this is a good idea? Should they be banning cell phones in schools? 855-752-4842. Cassandra on the live stream says, at my hospital, I can't even get into my Google account.
Yeah, I mean.
So there are a lot of restrictions at work, I'm sure. We're in people's workplaces.
Yeah, it is possible to be done. And also you can just take maybe the Chromebook and say, here are the things you get access to, period. And I don't know, I'm not an IT person, but you start somewhere basically.
And other things I have read leading up to this have said one of the bigger problems, even if you allow them to have their phones at lunch, that's where school fights start. That's when the messages start spreading is during lunch. And it's like so-and-so's having a fight with so-and-so and they're going to meet up later to fight. And I can absolutely understand how that is a distraction and not good for kids in class.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I don't know. It's this for me. My main focus would be on the classroom and the phones. Just if there's a way to get the phones out of the classroom, start there. Let's start there. Just start there, and then you work your way up. And if you have your phone with you in lunch or at study hall, no, not study hall, just be studying, lunch, and you're not causing problems, then fine. It's a privilege at that point. You screw up, you lose your privilege. You can't bring your phone to lunch. You can't have your phone at all unless some household emergency.
But if you start doing it on a case-by-case basis, I think that opens the doorway for all kinds of problems. Some parents going to go, you're picking on my little Becky, and she has to have access to this website, and you didn't do it to this kid. Do you understand what I mean?
I understand what you're saying. I understand what you mean, but that's where the teacher has to be like, look, we have to make decisions. And if they're both a part of the problem, then you take care of the problem. But if my son is just sitting there looking at, you know, baseball scores and this guy's son is using his phone to bully kids and start fights, then something needs to happen. Something needs to be taken. Or you just take them away, period. One person screws up or a group of kids screw up, you all suffer the consequences.
See, I would be more inclined to do that.
But then the question is, the concern from parents, how do I get a hold of my kid during the day? Because that is a real thing now. Back when I was a kid, the parent called, they called you to the office, you talked to them on the phone, but that's not where we live anymore. The telecommunications through a phone is where they live, and taking away that contact device can prove to be a problem, especially if, I don't know, if the kid's on medication or the kid has to go to grandma's house instead of dad's place today. You know what I mean? There's a whole host of issues that arise, but it doesn't mean something shouldn't be done. And from what the article wrote here is that every single school district has policies in place, but there's zero enforcement on it because it's just too difficult, which I understand. And it's not me saying, well, do it anyways, but start somewhere.
Yeah, we got to start somewhere because this is not helping our children, having them distracted by these devices when they're supposed to be learning.
Yeah.
855-752-4842. If you'd like to join this conversation, should we completely ban cell phones from schools? If you're a parent, are you concerned about some of the instances that Greg brought up? If they forgot their medications, if they forgot their lunch, if God forbid there is a shooting at their school,
yeah.
Do you want them to have their phone so they can contact you immediately, or do you think the school will contact you at the, you know, pretty much at the same time?
I mean, not knowing anyone who's been a part of a situation like that and not having a child myself, I know that I would want my child to get a hold of me, but having a cell phone and not having a cell phone, in that situation, I just want them to be safe. And then when they get to me, they will get to me. If they can grab a cell phone from someone else, there's 1,000 permutations. But I think what we have to also just take into account, we just want kids to learn and focus. And if the phones are a problem, then we need to do something about that. And then step by step, look at all the other issues. And parents might not like it. And I'm sorry, but too bad. If you want your kid to learn.
What's the priority?
Yeah, exactly.
What's the priority? We have news coming up next. I do want to share that eastbound 94 at Highway 83, all lanes are closed because of a crash in that area, and the roads aren't even that bad yet. There are a couple of accidents scattered around southeastern Wisconsin. You can check it out yourself at 511wi.gov. Mm-hmm. Check it out, 511wi.gov. We have news coming up next. When we return, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel will be joining us. He's host of Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 across the network. I highly encourage you to listen to his show. You can always check it out as a podcast if you're doing things on Saturday morning, as many people are. Just go to civicmedia.us, click on shows, and that will take you to every show all across the network. And we have archives of up to 100 shows. So check that out too, civicmedia.us. News is next. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air on the vast statewide, countrywide. If you've got the app, we are global, baby. The Civic Media Radio Network.
Talk to my pals and all the friends we've had. I can't talk to you, baby, and it's got me feeling so bad. Pick up the phone. I know you're home. Pick up the phone. You're all alone. Pick up the phone and say something sweet to me. It rang once, twice, three times. Pick up the phone.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Mach, Smooth, Cal B, a little Dave Brubeck there. Coming to you live from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up after the 11 o'clock news, Dan Schaefer will be here from the recombobulation area. We're going to talk about the elections. Yes, it's always election season in Wisconsin. Less than a week from today, we'll be going to the polls for the primary. That's for the Wisconsin State School of Public Instruction. And then on April 1st is the big election for the next Supreme Court justice here in Wisconsin. So stick around for Dan Schaefer joining us after the 11 o'clock news. Right now, delighted to be joined by our friend and colleague, former U.S. attorney and host of Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings, 9 to 11 on Civic Media. Jim Santel is here. Good morning, Jim. Thanks so much for joining us.
Jane, Greg, delighted once again to be with you. The 216th birthday of, yes, Abraham Lincoln. A good president, right?
Saved I've heard
our
that.
Nation.
And yeah, Charles Darwin, born on the same day.
Going in since, I wonder what direction we've been going in since that time. Right?
Yeah.
Slightly different.
Yeah.
I'm sure you have been very, very busy in just the past 3 weeks. Lots of things we wanted to have you on to talk about. But one of the things that I saw, Jim, that really jumped out at me, a GOP congressman calls for Trump to ignore court orders and just take a page out of Andrew Jackson's playbook. Can you explain what that means, please?
I really can't, and that's the problem, right? That's the challenge, right? No one can, and I think people on all sides of the political aisle are scratching their heads and saying, this is when it all begins to crumble, to make this quite serious. If in fact, we begin to pursue it's the president, whether it's people in Congress, others, frankly, the four of us, if we decide one morning that we're not going to follow the law, that's when the republic begins to crumble, right? And we know not only do we have this congressman on Capitol Hill, the vice president has likewise said recently, you know what, Donald Trump maybe doesn't have to follow those things that federal judges say. The answer, Mr. Vice President, is, oh, yes, he does. And indeed, just on Monday, I think you've already talked about this a bit. Just on Monday, there's a federal judge who in Rhode Island, this is one of the judges who's prevented Donald Trump from freezing all of these grants. He said, can't do it. Stop it. A temporary restraining order in place. And the judge on Monday has now come back and said, I wrote with clear and ambiguous words there are no impediments to the defendant's compliance, meaning Donald Trump, and is finding that Donald Trump and this administration are purposely not following the law. That is the beginning of the end. That's the crack that opens up then. And regardless of what source it comes from, whether it's disregarding opinions that, again, many of us may not especially embrace from the Supreme Court or other things like this, when you've got a lawless executive who simply says, I'm not going to do that, and those federal judges, those state court judges who do not have authority, in my view, to do these things, I'm not going to follow the law. That's when, again, almost 250 years of American Republic and American democracy come to an end.
I am not a constitutional scholar by any stretch of the imagination, Jim, but it's my understanding there is a reason we have three branches of government. The executive branch, which is the office of the presidency, the judicial branch, which are our courts, and then the Congress, the legislative branch. So they're all supposed to police each other, correct?
Exactly. And Jay, not only have you got it just right, I suspect all your listeners have got it just right too. This is basic civics. This is the stuff I think you begin to learn in the third and fourth grade, right? And to make this even more scary, if you will, I think this also recently goes back to what we talked about previously on this very broadcast one morning, and that is what the Supreme Court did back on July 1 of last year. Remember what they said at the time? And again, we focused an awful lot, Jane, Greg, you and I, and all of us, on this notion that a president has immunities for criminal conduct. There was something even more significant that that John Roberts told us is now the law. If you indulge me for just a minute, I just want to read two sentences from his opinion, pages 9 and 10. He said, the president, again, contrary to Jane, to what you've just said, occupies a unique position in the constitutional scheme. Well, unique means singular, right? One. No, there are three, Mr. Chief Roberts. And then he goes on to say this. He says, the framers sought to encourage, get this language, an energetic, vigorous, decisive, and speedy execution of the laws by placing in the hands of a single, constitutionally indispensable individual the ultimate authority that, in respect of the other branches, the Constitution divides among many. We talked about the speedy administration of the laws, and that you can only do that if we've got a president who is muscular and acts quickly. Well, this president certainly is acting quickly. But I'd argue this morning that we also have to look to John Roberts and five other members of the Supreme Court who told us exactly what Donald Trump is now doing. And for all these lawsuits, including lawsuits where federal judges are now saying, no, Mr. Trump, you need to do what I've got to say. What he is going to say is, but the Chief Justice told me I can do otherwise. We are heading toward that area of a constitutional crisis, if indeed, which is when one branch of government simply refuses to abide by what the others are directing him or her or it to do. This is, we're on the precipice right now. And I do not believe that that's hyperbole, not at all.
Well, if he ignores the courts, that makes him king.
It does.
Doesn't it?
It does. And look once again, Jane, to what Sonia Sotomayor said, right? But Ketanji Brown Jackson said, Elena Kagan along with them. She basically said, we do not have kings in America. And then they conclude their dissents in that case by saying, I fear for the democracy. I fear for the future of the Republic, and talks about the establishment. Yes, going back to King George, someone who doesn't have to comply with anything because all the power is vested in him. It is a good thing that right now we're pushing back on many of these things. Those are policy decisions, but it's right to do it. When a judge in our system says, Mr. Santel, as one of them did just yesterday, here's what I want you to do. The answer is, yes, I can appeal the decision. I can maybe low level fight back and say, Your Honor, I wonder if you would reconsider that. But I do what I'm told, because that's how the system works. This president, in his first term and now in the second term, every indication, I don't care. I don't care about these judges. And as I've spoken before, we look to South Korea. We look to Israel before the Hamas war at Gaza. What did people do when they were facing these similar crises recently in South Korea? They took to the streets. They shut the country down and said, this is so important. The rule of law is so important. I look outside, admittedly, not a good day today in southeastern Wisconsin with the snow, but still, I wonder what it's going to take for Americans to take the street peacefully, peacefully, nonviolently, and say, we're shutting this down until the rule of law takes hold once again, Mr. Chief Justice, frankly, members of Congress, and also Mr. President.
If you're just joining us, Jim Santel is our guest. He hosts Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 across the Civic Media Radio Network. He is a former U.S. attorney as well, and we are talking about Donald Trump and his administration essentially saying, yeah, courts, schmortz, I don't have to listen to you. I'm going to do whatever I want. It doesn't matter if it seems to be illegal. He does not have the authority, Jim, to go in and X out agencies that were created by Congress.
Right, right. And again, that's the point that so many judges are also making. They're also saying, where are the lawyers inside the West Wing saying, Mr. President, as they did apparently, at least the first portion of the first term, where are the lawyers saying, Mr. President, with due respect, or whatever respect may be due to someone who articulates this completely crazy idea, you can't do this. And we're going to get slaughtered in court, not only for that reason, but simply wrong to do it under law. Where are the lawyers is what the judges are asking out loud. They're almost laughing out loud at some of the attorneys. I'm embarrassed to say, although perhaps not for given the comparison of the Justice Department I worked for, they're almost laughing at the present Justice Department attorneys who are coming in and arguing these things. Birthright citizenship that based upon some jurisdiction, Native American populations in this nation are not citizens of the United States of America. They're arguing those kinds of things. And when the administration says, I don't agree with that, do they have a possibility of appeal? Sure they do. That's the process. What they don't have the right to do, Jane, as you just said, is simply to say, I'm not going to do it. Other circumstances, again, the circumstance yesterday, if I were to say, judge, I'm just not doing that. The judge would look at me and she would say, Mr. Santel, tomorrow morning, bring your toothbrush to the court because you're going to be spending some time in custody. You're going to be in contempt of court. It does raise, it's not just a silly notion here, it does raise the issue. If indeed he continues to violate and to thwart what these judges are saying, at some point, does a judge order that the secretary of fill in the blank, the assistant secretary of, again, fill in the blank, be imprisoned for a time until that contempt is purged? The judges have the power to do that with the U.S. Marshals Service. Stunning time.
Well, the thing, there's two points that come to mind, though, is like this is kind of nothing new, though, because for years now, I mean, maybe not the president, but members of his party and team and his cult have been denying and ignoring and subpoenas and everything. Like this is nothing we're not used to by them shirking law, saying, what are you going to do? And the law saying, well, I guess we're doing what we can do. With regard to, though, the point you brought up with the lawyers in the White House, my guess is that he's got a bunch of people in there saying, yeah, we can make that happen. We could do that. Mm-hmm. And they'll go back on appeal if they lose again. I don't think birthright citizenship means that much to Donald Trump. I think what it is the fight. And as long as he can say is, I fought, I lost, but they're wrong and you're right and we're going to do this no matter what. That's all he cares about. He does not care about some of these topics. He just wants the fight to look good. And whomever says no to him is the big, bad, anti-American parent.
Well, whoever says no to him is an activist judge.
Exactly. I mean, it's just a matter of they don't get it. They don't understand what we're trying to do. We're trying to make America great again. They're trying to keep us down. If they were to win, they'd be like, okay, well, now what do we do?
Right, right. And they'd be going back and saying, oh, Mr. President, we lost. We just had our head handed to us. We're in trouble now. I think you're absolutely right, Craig. The rhetorical question, who's standing around the president, doesn't have a good answer because they're all loyalists. And yes, indeed, I'm embarrassed to say now about my own profession. Will you find lawyers out there who will, you know, sort of attracted by the notion of working in the White House, go there and say to this president whatever he wants to hear? Yeah. The one thing I'll also say, it's a small footnote, is this. We also know that a lot of those lawyers, say, for example, Rudy Giuliani, Eastman, others out there, have also lost their licenses for doing that, right? Mm-hmm. And so it comes at a cost. And a lot of those representations made inside the courts of America, that's a small thing, but it does have some pushback effect in that area.
I would have to think too, Jim, I mean, obviously, in order to be to reach the position of a judge, to have a judgeship in anything, there has to be a certain amount of ego involved.
Absolutely.
Correct?
Oh,
absolutely.
And are all of these people just fine with being run roughshod over by this administration? It's like, yeah, that's fine. Whatever. Go ahead.
Right, right. And you'd like to think, again, that people would wake up, when, especially when they come to specific things that affect them. Again, these cuts, again, domestic cuts, we've got foreign cuts. I know you've spent a lot of time, as have I, talking about this USAID shutdown, which is huge. That's when, of course, that Americans today may look and say, that's those overseas people. When one day the power shift on the face of this planet, maybe it's going to take a few years, has an impact, and we find ourselves quite literally outside of any sort of norms on the face of this planet, and we are no longer the power that we should be, that's when the impact will be much clearer.
We're going to continue our conversation with Jim Santel. You can always join us, 855-752-4842. Keep it here. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach, Calvinator on the board, coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform shedding more users than a husky blowing its winter coat. Jim Santel is our guest. He's host of Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 across the network. Also a former U.S. attorney. Before we get back to chatting with Jim, I do want to remind folks, southeastern Wisconsin is under a winter weather warning that kicks in. It doesn't kick in until noon, actually, and the snow is supposed to really hit its peak around 3 o'clock this afternoon, and already checking 511wi.gov, we've got accidents around Green Bay, Nina, now Wisconsin Dells just popped up, a couple around Madison, Milwaukee, Janesville, Beloit, and Kenosha, and it isn't even all that heavy just yet. So please, 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 as you're heading out later on today to get home, build in some extra time, watch your speeds. If you can leave early, please do so, and double check that website. It's also, you can download it as an app, 511wi.gov. I believe Jean from Eau Claire has been waiting patiently on the line. Good morning, Jean. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, guys. Thank you so much for having this great guest. Always wonderful for your show on Saturday. Now, I had red flags today because I was calling my congressman, even though he doesn't listen to me, regarding Doge, you know, and Trump putting Elon Musk in charge and all of our data being accessible. And their response to me was, this is legal. The president has the authority. And then she brought up, I didn't have my notepad with me, some law in the 1800s or something, that this is legal. So I'm going to get off the phone right now and see if you have a response to that. Thank you very much, and great show. Thank you. Bye.
Don't you love
Thanks
it when
so
the,
much,
the laws, it's from the 1800s when they knew everything.
They're really big on going back to the 1800s, yeah. Man.
And if you, again, invoking my historical reference this morning, go back to the 1800s, you look to the birth of a man named Abraham Lincoln, right? Who was a guy who abided by the law. And I'm sure, Gene, appreciate very much the observation. I have no doubt that someone is telling you that, which is scary. But Abraham Lincoln was just the opposite. Again, during his time in the legislature, and I was a lawyer in Kentucky, Illinois, other places. He was somebody who said, no, this is the law, and it is a reflection of not lawlessness. It's a reflection of common sense and the notion that people, the government should serve people and not the other way around.
Going back to the Supreme Court essentially determining that Donald Trump, whatever the president does is fine, while he's in office, he can't be held accountable for anything, for doing things that are illegal. I find it interesting, Jim, that the Supreme Court would essentially undercut their own power to that extent.
Right, right.
They all think that they're going to be immune from this. That seems deluded to me.
Right, right. Then your insight is spot on, Jane, once again. And because, again, if you talk about an all-powerful, again, my word, not John Roberts' word, but those other words, you've got to act quickly. You've got to act with great force. You've got to be decisive and vigorous, that sort of thing. Well, if any of these cases eventually come up to the Supreme Court, which itself may be scary, who knows what they would do in with respect to the appeals on these things. But if the Supreme Court would say, Mr. President, you've gone too far, and under our precedent, you cannot do these kinds of things like freeze this aid. You can't amend the Constitution. You can't let Elon Musk, who's not a government official, have access to all of these records in the Treasury Department, labor, all those kinds of things. You can't do that. At some point, Donald Trump also looks down Pennsylvania Avenue then and says, well, wait a minute, John. You told me that I've got to be vigorous. I've got to be strong. And I'm going to use your own words. And to your point, Jane, yep. He will basically say, you gave me this authority,
yes,
and now you are a secondary or even third tier branch. And then we do have a king. Then we have a king.
Yep. We do have Jack from Merrimack with a question about prosecution as well of Trump's minions. Yep. Jack, you're on the line. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. This is for Mr. Santel. I'm wondering, Trump has been given regal immunity from prosecution for whatever he does as president, apparently. Or as Dick Nixon said something like, if the president does it, that means it's not illegal. But how about his minions? You know, I mean, we've got Elon Musk, who is hacking into government records, and Musk's six minions. And we've got other people that are enforcing his edicts on shutting down portions of the government. That stuff is illegal. Can't those people be prosecuted?
Thank you.
Great question, Jack. Thanks, Jack. Thank you for that. We're running out of time, but go ahead, Jim.
Sure. Just two very quick points. One is that, of course, the Supreme Court's order has to do with criminal matters, which are horrifying. If you think about it, you can commit crimes. It doesn't really apply to civil matters, but Jack's point is the most important one, which is nowhere in that opinion, it's right here in my hand, does the Supreme Court tell us, what about the people, I'll refer to them as the Nuremberg people at the risk of sounding much too serious here. What if the president directs you to do something that is criminal or illegal? The Supreme Court opinion does not expressly protect those people. Now, the only other footnote to this, of course, is who's going to prosecute? That would be the Department of Justice. Pam Bondi is there. Kash Patel will be there soon. And you probably would not have a prosecution anyway. But Jack's point is another specter, and we should all be listening to him and to others who say the same thing.
We have so much more to talk about when we run out of time. Jim Santel, catch him Saturday mornings. It's Brilliant Amicus, a law review from 9 to 11 across Civic Media. Thank you so much, Jim. Really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Jane.
Thanks, Jim.
Take care.
News is coming up next. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air, coming to you across the vast Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.